Hello, friends. We are interrupting Healing Hearts to remind you April is not just a month. It's a call to action. This month, we celebrate Volunteer Appreciation and Child Abuse Prevention Month, recognizing those who give their time and hearts to protect our most vulnerable. Every child deserves a life filled with love, safety, and normalcy. But sadly, not every child experiences this. That's where we, as a community, step in. Our amazing volunteers are the unsung heroes working tirelessly to advocate for children's well-being. They're the voices that speak up, the hands that reach out, and the hearts that care deeply. But the fight against child abuse needs much more than just appreciation. It needs action. This April, we invite you to participate in our efforts to protect children, provide them with the normalcy they deserve, and advocate for their rights. Visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org to find out what you can do to amplify the voices of our volunteer advocates. Remember to engage with us on social media. Participate and protect, because every child deserves a champion, and that champion could be you. Now, back to Healing Hearts.
We have to tend to ourselves, or there's no way that we're going to be able to stay calm and regulated when our child is having a hard time. So that is critical.
Hey there, friend. Welcome to Healing Hearts, where we understand the challenges of parenting children with behavioral, developmental, or emotional divergence. If you've ever struggled with fear, uncertainty, exhaustion, isolation, or even feelings of guilt along your parenting path, we get it. Here, it's all about guiding you through the highs and lows of raising kids who need equal parts love, patience, and empathy. Our approach is a little different. Healing Hearts was created and continues to be hosted by dynamic high school and college students who consider the support of vulnerable or at-risk children and their families critical to student success. What can you expect from us? Encouragement and honest talk with terrific guests, sharing relatable stories and smart tips to make your journey smoother. We also focus on parents and children's mental and emotional health because it's vital. You'll get simple, effective strategies to keep you strong and positive, because parenting is a heroic act. And when advice isn't enough, we point you towards extra help and resources. Stay with us, tune in, and let's take this journey together. We are here to back you up, boost your spirits, and help you confidently face each day. Welcome to the Healing Hearts family. We are so happy to have you here.
Today, we welcome Debbie Reber, inspiring advocate for neurodiversity and founder of Tilt Parenting, a trailblazing platform for parents of neurologically atypical or differently wired children. Inspired by her own experiences raising her son Asher, Debbie saw the need for a supportive community where parents could find guidance and hope. Facing a world lacking in resources and understanding, she embarked on a mission to ensure no parent feels alone in this journey. Tilt Parenting, launched in 2016, offers optimism and practical support to families navigating this unique path. Thank you, Debbie, for joining us on Healing Hearts.
Thank you so much for inviting me and for referring to my work as trailblazing. That sounded really cool. Thank you.
Of course. We just wanted to start off, if you could share your background and journey with our listeners, maybe about the origins of Tilt Parenting and the term differently wired.
Yeah, so I always like to say that this was not the career I planned on having, doing the work that I do. I used to work in kids television a long, long, long time ago. And then I spent many years writing books and for teen and tween girls, nonfiction kind of self-help books. And I would speak to groups of girls and trying to heal my own inner teen who was still struggling. And then I became pregnant and I gave birth to a child who was not a teen girl and was in fact a a little kid who was moving through the world differently and was kind of different from what I expected, right? Didn't know that right away, but throughout the course of preschool and then early elementary, we started to gather information and discovered that our child was neurodivergent, and found myself really struggling to access resources that felt positive and hopeful. And as a parent, I felt like I was really just not doing a good job at all. My kid wasn't thriving. Our family wasn't thriving. And so just like I wrote books to help teen girls, I decided when I get through this, I'm going to do something to support other parents so they don't have to experience this sense of overwhelm and isolation and just feeling stuck. And like, this is a really difficult parenting journey. So the seeds were planted for what eventually became Tilt Parenting, which is a resource for parents who are raising kids who are in any way differently wired. And to define that term, I use it as an umbrella term to describe anyone who has any sort of neurodevelopmental difference. So that could be ADHD or autism or a learning disability, dyslexia, dysgraphia. It could be someone who's gifted, that is neurodivergent. It could be someone who has sensory issues. So it's a really big umbrella term that isn't a medicalized term. It's not about a disorder. It's more bringing attention to the fact that this person is wired in a unique way and therefore has unique needs.
I think that was said so beautifully. I work with a lot of neurodivergent kids and I've never heard it said like that. So I wanted to just dive into a little bit of your experience. So you personally said that your son Asher is wired differently. So how did you first identify this and what kind of steps did you take in this diagnosis?
Well, I think very early on, we knew that we were raising a really intense person and very bright and precocious and complicated. So early on, Asher taught himself to read before he was three, which was both delightful and fascinating. And we had those like, what does this mean kind of moment? And also just really intense, experienced things in such a big way and was emotionally dysregulated by seemingly little things. And so we started getting information through preschool teachers who would like say, hey, can we talk after class? And we started getting information that this has been really hard and this is really challenging. And I knew that other parents weren't, well, not a lot of other parents in our class were dealing with the same thing. So we started to get curious, is there something else going on here besides, you know, my husband and I just being really bad at parenting, right? Or just having this really willful child. And so we started the diagnostic process. You know, we did our first neuropsych when Asher was five, and we got some provisional diagnoses of ADHD and something called pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, which is a really gross mouthful of terms that just sound really terrible. And then we just, over the years, we did additional neuropsychs and gathered more information to get a kind of a complete diagnostic. Well, I don't know if it's complete, to get it more information about how our child is wired and what those strengths are and where he could use more support.
Yeah, so I'm sure finding out that diagnosis from such a young age and not really having much of an idea before could be very overwhelming, especially finding out later for your child. So what kind of resources did you expect to be available that you later found maybe needed improvement, or resources that were a lack thereof in general?
Yeah, I mean, so my child's 19 now, so this is a while ago at this point, and things really have changed. But back then, you know, it was really hard to find information. The focus of so many of the resources was on fixing challenging behavior. It wasn't on understanding kind of the nervous system and the unique needs of this person. It was all about behavior modification so that, you know, children can be in this classroom or in this space without getting upset. And so that alone is so different than, you know, the way things are now. And it didn't feel good to me because it felt like we were focusing on the wrong thing. So it was hard to find the right resources. It was hard to find resources that felt like they were in alignment with our philosophy of parenting, and that we're more strengths-based and more focused on what does this kid, this fascinating human, do really well, right? And it was also just, you know, insurance companies don't cover a lot of the resources available. It's hard to know, like, what do we do? Occupational therapy or executive function coaching, or, you know, where should we start? So we were just kind of overwhelmed with the landscape in general as well. And again, back then, there weren't really even Facebook groups to kind of find your people. So unless you knew someone who was dealing with the same thing, and because there's so much stigma, a lot of people don't talk about it. So it was really just hard to know, where do we turn? How do we do this? And that's one of the big reasons why I wanted to create Tilt, because it was so hard to navigate.
So on that point about finding other parents, what was your experience finding other parents who could relate to your situation, or how were you able to create a village?
We'll say that when Asher was in second grade, it was our third school in 3 years. So we did different for kindergarten, first and second grade. And second grade was the first public school. And someone I knew from our preschool had a child who was neurodivergent. I think he had sensory processing challenges, maybe ADHD, and was also very bright. And that parent pulled me aside and said, there's a group of parents that meet in the library once a month, parents with twice exceptional kids. I'd never heard that term before, but I kind of knew. I was like, oh, I think these are my people. And so I went to an event and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many of us. Like, I had no idea, but it wasn't advertised. There was no flyer in the school bulletin board. Like, it was literally another parent saw that I was in this place and invited me to come. But that was the first time where I was in the same space with other parents, and we broke into little breakout groups, and the ADHD table and the autism table and the learning disabilities table, and we could just talk about, oh my gosh, it was like, oh, you too? Oh, it felt so good to just be with other people who got it. And of course, we left that school after that year. And then I decided, you know, I'm going to create ways for other parents to connect with each other. And it took me a couple of years to do that, but that's what I ended up doing.
So what has been your most significant learning experience in understanding and supporting Asher's unique needs? I mean, coming from the table with the other parents during second grade, it seems like there was a lot to learn and a lot to, you know, understand. So how was that process?
Oh, it was so painful. And it took a long time. It was a lot of missteps. And again, just hard to find good information and resources. So much more are available now. But I think for me, the biggest thing was when I reframed my thinking about behavior, because the behavior was really challenging, right? First of all, just to navigate and to parent and have this kid who really could get dysregulated in public spaces and in classrooms and at home. And, you know, my husband and I feeling like, we don't know what to do here. This is really hard. And none of us were doing well. The whole family was not thriving. And we were so focused on behavior modification, point systems. How can we reward good choices? How can we, you know, help Asher feel motivated? And so I spent a lot of time in that space. And for me, kind of the biggest shift was when I started to realize, oh, these aren't choices my child's making. My kid does not have the skills right now or the ability to navigate this in a different way because of the way that his nervous system is wired, right? And so once I kind of reframed and realized this isn't a choice, this is a child who doesn't have other coping skills right now, and that must really suck. Like, that must be so hard to go through life being misunderstood and getting really upset about things and then getting the negative attention from that upset. So I had to kind of reprogram myself to respond to challenging behavior with calmness, with empathy, with validation, with understanding, and then really get curious about what is the underlying skill or need that isn't being met and how can we work on that and not focus on like just getting this person who's upset to calm down?
That's such an interesting point, because there's such a big stigma, I think, around you need to fix this child's behavior. Like, they're incorrectly wired instead of differently wired. So how would you recommend that we continue to break that stigma? Because I know that a lot of parents still raise their children in that kind of way, especially if they're wired differently. So what can we do as a general population or as parents or as allies to help break that stigma?
Well, I think people don't know what they don't know, right? And so there's a lot of pieces to this. So for the parents who are raising neurodivergent kids, we have to kind of uncover our own discomfort with our kids' labels or neurodivergence so that we can just normalize our family's experiences, right? Because if we try to hide what's going on, or, you know, we're not transparent about who our child is, then we are reinforcing the idea that it's a bad thing. So it is really important for parents who are in this, you know, parenting journey to reconcile with their own internalized ableism and to just normalize this is what's going on. And it's not a bad thing. It's who my child is. And to really compassionately educate other people who interact with our kids. So that's what parents of neurodivergent kids can do. That's one of the things. Parents who aren't on this parenting journey, they have a lot of power in shifting this dynamic as well. And it's really important for those parents to also recognize, where are they judging other people, right? I just talked with a parent, earlier today, who said that they actually moved school districts because her child was getting negative feedback in the classroom in like second grade. And other parents were putting pressure on this family, like, your kid is ruining my child's experience. And that happens because if a kid is dysregulated, it can be tricky, right? It's tricky in a classroom management. And so then these families feel called out and they kind of shrink, right? Or they leave. So for parents who aren't in this journey, realizing where they're judging other families for what's going on and getting really curious about learning about what's actually happening with that child and making sure that they're also talking in a way that is respectful to their kids about the other kids in the class, instead of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you have to deal with that kid in your class. Instead of like, oh, well, based on what you're saying, it sounds like it might be really tough for him to sit still. And that must be really tricky to be in a classroom where your body's wired to move, right? And then there's expectations. So I think parents can really set the tone for how we talk about neurodivergence in general.
It seems like we need to all have a little bit more empathy in our steps and how we interact with what's going on.
I was going to say the same thing. I think we all kind of need to have some grace for that compassion and show that more often. I wanted to just go into a more kind of general question, but what would you say are your top three most important reminders for parents of exceptional children?
Yeah, I would say firstly is to remember that your child isn't broken. So, you know, I think when we get information as a parent that our child is neurodivergent or, you know, has this or that diagnosis or learning disability, we can really, as a parent, scramble and get into fix-it mode. I need to fix this problem so that my kid can stay in this school or go to this college or participate in this way, because we can be really attached to our own vision for what our family life should look like, right? So if you notice that you're getting into fix-it mode, it's really important to say, okay, there's nothing wrong with my kid. My child is not broken. My child has unique needs. We all have unique needs. My child has needs that I need to better understand so that I can support him or her or them in whatever environment they're in. So that's the first one. The second one has to do with timelines. that is an area where we often get really stressed out if we think our kid is behind. And that's part of the society we live in, right? Like I'm thinking about graduation or like the college announcements, right? My child's going here on social media. And then you get these parents whose kids are not ready for that. And then they're behind, right? So we can feel really stressed out if we feel like our child isn't where they should be socially or academically or emotionally in their developmental timeline. So just realizing, you know what, everybody's on their own timeline. Everyone develops unevenly, and that's okay. So don't get stressed about that. And then the third thing I would say is that taking care of yourself as a parent is actually the best thing that you can do if you're raising especially a neurodivergent child, because they demand a lot from us. We can't phone it in with these kids. And it can be really challenging to always be like having to advocate and, you know, navigate tricky situations with our kids. So we have to tend to ourselves, or there's no way that we're going to be able to stay calm and regulated when our child is having a hard time. So that is critical. And it's something a lot of parents don't do because they think they don't have time, but it's really important.
So for parents who want to learn more, both parents who have differently wired children or parents who are trying to support, do you know any resources now that you maybe didn't know before, including your website and Tilt Parenting, but just resources that they could look towards?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Tilt Parenting is a wealth of resources. I've done over 360 podcast episodes on everything under the sun about this journey. So there'll definitely be good resources in there for any parent who consumes content that way. There's a really good website called understood.org, which was not around when I was early on in my journey. And that is for all, it used to be just for parents of kids with learning and attention issues, but they're actually now including adults because you know what? If your kid's neurodivergent, there's a good chance you are too. So understood.org is a great resource. And then I would just say there's so many books out now. When I published Differently Wired, it was the first book to look at neurodivergence in this broader lens. You know, there was like the How to Parent Your ADHD Child, or, you know, there were little books here and there, but now, if you go to the bookstore, there are so many more resources on neurodivergence in general, especially in the parenting journey. So if you're a reader, there's plenty of books to fill your bookshelf with.
I just wanted to take a moment to kind of talk about a bit of a lighter subject. I know there's a lot of like hardships and frustrations in raising a child as a parent in general. So could you share with us a laugh out loud moment?
Yeah, there are so many. I just remember one time laying in bed, you know, we used to read at night together, just have these long conversations. Those days are over. But you know, when Ash was a tween, we'd have these like really deep conversations. And I remember one night we were doing that. It was like lights were out and we were just chatting about whatever. And all of a sudden Ash said, "It's like that Shakespeare quote," and then proceeded to like share this like quote. And I was like, okay. And it was like a lengthy quote verbatim. I was like, first of all, I didn't know that you were reading Shakespeare. And how did you? And he just said, you know, when he explained where he read it from. And then he was like, yeah, well, when there's a quote that I like, I commit it to memory. I was like, okay, good to know. But I just, the fact I'm like, what is happening in this kid's brain that he's walking around with these like quotes he can pull from the sky? So that's what came to mind when you asked that.
I think that's so amazing. And it really embraces the term differently wired. Like, it's just so interesting. So on a different note, how can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, so tiltparenting.com is kind of the home base, and there's tons of free resources on there, including like a 7-day differently wired challenge video series and things like that, if you want to start to understand the philosophy behind Tilt, which by the way is about us as parents. It's not about fixing your kid. It's about how to better show up for your child. So tiltparenting.com, and I'm on Instagram and Facebook also at Tilt Parenting. I have not dip my toe into the TikTok universe yet. I don't know if I have it in me at this point in my life, but Instagram for sure.
Well, Debbie, thank you once more for participating in Healing Hearts at Risk series. We appreciate your willingness to share your personal experiences and valuable insights on parenting neurodiverse children.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. We hope you found warmth and wisdom here to help you on your parenting odyssey. What is the best way to support us? Please subscribe, leave a review, and share Healing Hearts with anyone who could use this supportive community. Stay connected with us on social media or visit www.speakupforkidspbc.org for more information. Remember, a heart, like a garden, needs care to flourish. Until next time, you've been listening to Healing Hearts.